This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
His shadow bumping over depressions and irregularities in the western cliff face as the sun shone over the high eastern ridge to cast it there, and then he was lost in white water. The center of himself, he did not know to call it his heart, was attempting to exit through his mouth. Then there was an enveloping coldness, breath-stealing, a primeval wetness. A burst of wild river, colder than anything he had known, rushed up to meet him and caught him before he could sink to hit one of the rocks. The experience was like a second birth and a life that might include several births and rebirths. Perhaps at the end of this cold, wet birth, he would return to the warm, dark place with a loud, steady beat.
Well, thank you so much for reading that. I think that gives a really good introduction to the characters, introduction to the place and the writing style. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Once again, this is Jennifer Kemp. I've been interviewing Scott Elliott, author of the novel Temple Grove.
Thanks.
Radio is proud to broadcast the 26th annual Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival. Thursday through Sunday, July 4th through 7th, KBOO will be broadcasting live from Tom McCall Waterfront Park for the Portland metro area and throughout the state with our partners in Ashland, Bend, Newport, Salem, Warm Springs, and more. Internet listeners can tune in to KBOO.fm. Again, that's the 26th annual Waterfront Blues Festival, a benefit for the Oregon Food Bank. Because no one should be hungry. More information on costs, benefit to KBOO members, performing artists, and more can be found at kboo.fm.
Today's Black Book Talk is a rebroadcast of the June interview with author Maya Angelou.
Join my feet, cause I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. And when I try to show them, they say they still can't see. And I say, it's in the arch of my back, the sun of my smile, the ride of my breasts, the grace of my style. And now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk real loud. When you see me walking, it ought to make you proud. I say, it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hands, the need for my care. Cause I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's you and you and me.
Good morning. And welcome to the June edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman, and I'm here with
Patricia Welch, the Library Lady,
and Obie Hill, Miriam H. Books.
This month, we are so delighted to have with us Dr. Maya Angelou, who's written a new book called Mom and Me and Mom. Welcome. Dr. Angelou will start off by reading to us.
Thank you. Frequently, I have been asked how I got to be this way. How did I, born black in a white country, poor in a society where wealth is adored and sought after at all costs, female in an environment where only large ships and some engines are described favorably by using the female pronoun, how did I get to be Maya Angelou?
Many times I've wanted to quote Topsy, the young black girl in Uncle Tom's Cabin. I have been tempted to say, I don't know, I just growed. I never used that response for a number of reasons. First, because I read the book in my early teens, and the ignorant black girl embarrassed me. Second, I knew that I had become the woman I am because of the grandmother I loved and the mother I came to adore. So that's why I wrote Mom, Me, and Mom.
When I first picked up the book, and thank you for reading it. It was great to hear it in your own voice. But when I first picked up the book from the station, I read the prologue because that was my question. I wonder why she wrote this book.
Yes. Well, see, one of the things I learned was that love heals and liberates. I had been, when I was 3 and my brother 5, my mother and father agreed to disagree and found they didn't like each other, and neither of them wanted the worry and the burden of having 2 toddlers. So they sent us, me and my brother, unaccompanied on the train from Los Angeles to a little village in Arkansas about the size of your studio there in Portland. And we actually arrived, thanks to the kindness of Pullman car porters and dining car waiters who took us off trains, put us on the next train, and so forth. We actually arrived there and stayed there with my grandmother, my father's mother. And she was everything. She was kind. She was quiet. She was over 6 foot when she died. And she's moved softly. She used to say, "Sister, Mama don't know what she's going to do. Mama just going to step out on the word of God. Mama just going to step out, right out." And I used to picture this 6 foot tall, huge woman, bigger than most men, not fat, just tall and broad, and with long dresses on. And I picture her standing up in the sky with nothing under her, and, you know, holding her up there, and with moons and suns swirling all around her head, just standing there. Oh, my land, I loved her so. And I followed her around. I liked her, too. So that people used to say, "Sister Henderson, I see you got your shadow with you again." And she would look at me and say, "Yes, I guess so, because when I rise, she rises, and when I sit, she sits. And yes, she's my shadow, all right." So I stayed with her until I was seven. My brother was 9. And we were at home. Did you want to ask any more?
Yes.
Or shall I just go on talking?
I was going to say that my most favorite part of the book, well, there were 2 favorites. One of the most favorite parts was when your grandmother, Mama, took you out to California to be with your mother, and she stayed with you until you got comfortable with the idea. Yes. And my other most favorite part was the image of you running down, waking up in the middle of the night, running down the stairs, and going to the hospital and double parking.
Yes.
Okay. This is Patricia Welch. I have a question. It's sort of a follow-up on the initial question. We met your mother in I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yes.
So we heard that story. We met Vivian Baxter. But I would still say, since I had a very vivid image of her from that book, why did you feel the need for the second book? Why did you feel the need for this book, which really focuses on her? Because a lot of us felt that we knew her.
Well, the first book was just a touch of Vivian Baxter. She was an incredible woman. She changed through her, but she alone changed so much of the world.
Not just your life,
she
but the world.
A seaman, able-bodied first-class seaman. She said, I called her once from Los Angeles, and I said, "I'd like to see you. I'm going to go to New York, and I don't know how long I'll be gone, so I'd like to see you." She was in San Francisco. She said, "Oh, baby, please, yes, and let's meet in Bakersfield." And she said, "I want to see you, too, because I'm going to see." So I asked her, "You're going to see what?" She said, "I'm going to become a seaman." So I asked, "Why? You know, she was about 5'4"
Oh.
She was, she owned nightclubs and hotels and gambling joints. And I asked why. She said, because they told me they wouldn't let women in their union. She said, you know what I told them? I said, you want to bet? I put my foot in that door up to my hip. The women are very colorful. Go step over my foot, get in that union, get aboard a ship, and go to sea. And when she retired, black, white, Spanish-speaking, and Asian women gave a party for her in San Francisco, called her the Mother of the Sea.
Okay.
So she was just an amazing woman. She didn't take, as the old folks say, she didn't take tea for the fever.
Okay.
She just was herself.
How much of your grandmother has become a part of you? You know, what part of your grandmother do you think you reflected in your being? And how much of your mother do you think reflected in your being?
My grandmother, my father's mother, told me a number of things. She said, sister, when you get, give. When you learn, teach. That will take you all over the world. She said there are people, because at a time I stopped speaking, she said there are people who say you must be stupid, you must be a moron, because you can't talk. Sister, mama don't care. Mama know when you and the good Lord get ready, you're going to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. You're going to teach all over this world. I used to sit there and think, this poor ignorant woman, doesn't she know I will never speak? Well, as it is, I have taught. I've taught at the Habima Theater in Tel Aviv and translated Serbo-Croatian Yugoslavia. I lived in Egypt as a journalist. And I teach at Wake Forest. I'm the Reynolds Professor at Wake Forest, a lifetime appointment.
And every time you're on the Oprah Winfrey Show, you teach millions. Excuse me for cutting in, but I just did have
I'm
to
sorry,
say that.
I didn't hear you.
I said every time you're on the Oprah Winfrey Show or any other major broadcast or any other media, you're teaching everywhere you go. Really?
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll be on this Sunday, by the way.
All right. We'll be watching.
On Super Soul Sunday.
Hot dogs. Okay.
So did I read that your mother wanted your brother Bailey to be a teacher?
No, she wanted him to write this book.
Okay.
I said to her, 25 years ago, I want to write about you. She said, no, let Bailey write it.
Okay.
But I'm sorry to say, Bailey came under the influence of drugs. And although he was the most brilliant person my family ever made, if my family came closest to making a genius, when they made my brother. But he went under the influence of the drugs.
Bailey died a few years ago, right?
I'm sorry?
Bailey died a few years ago, right?
Yes, he did, right here in Winston. I sent for him to come here. He died here. My mother, I sent for her. My stepfather. So they all came here to be with me and to be loved a lot.
Well, tell me this. One of my favorite poems is "And Still I Rise." And I just heard you mention your grandmother, your father's mother, rising.
Yes.
Could you explain, is that connected some way?
Well, again, I always think of rising, not just from the bed of the night bed, but rising in spirit. Mm-hmm. Because some people, alas, are so themselves crippled. They want to cripple people around them, and they are unkind, so that they use words that belittle people. Alas, some parents do that ignorantly. They do that to their children. Some black parents will use the N-word and describing their children and say, you little the child now looks into the mirror when he or she brushes her teeth and says, I'm the very object of the people of my parents who despise me. They despise people like me. And yet they ask me to go out and run the 10-yard dash and bring back the gold ribbon. Well, they've broken both my legs. I can't do it. So what we have to do is find ways in which we can rise from the circumstances where sometimes the larger society or other crippled people would like to see us reduced to.
Twice in the book you talk about, that I remember, you talk about deserving. When you get to California with your grandmother and you look at your beautiful mother, you think that you're not the daughter that she deserves. And then in the end of the book, after your mother dies, you think that she deserved to be loved in the way that you love her, the way that you, her daughter, love her.
She deserved to have a good daughter who had a good memory and who adored her.
Yes.
And could write. She deserved that. She was all of that.
Yes.
But grandmother, back to rising. Mm-hmm. Grandmother used to stand out and tell me, "Our sister Mama going to stand out on the Word of God." So I wrote a song for her, which is sung by the mission, by the Mississippi Mass Choir. It says, "You said to call on your name, and I'm calling. You said to trust in your word, and I'm trusting. You said to lean on your arm, and I'm leaning. I'm stepping out on your word." I always think of Mama as rising. And I raised a son. I have one child I gave birth to. I have hundreds of children. I do take people's children, black ones and white ones, and Spanish ones. I just take people's children. If they're available, I'll take them. And think of them as rising, standing up beyond the measurement that the larger society says, you can't pass, you can't go beyond this.
Okay, I'm curious about something. I heard that you like rap, well, some rappers, and I know a lot of people of older generations sort of spurn the young people who are producing this music. So, I mean, every time you speak, you're such a poet. So I was thinking, which of the rappers do you like, and do you feel, you know, you feel the poetry in their music and in their presentation?
Well, I particularly like Common.
Ah, yes.
I'm serious about Common. The Dave Chappelle has come, and we've done... I did a one-hour program with him, and he's intelligent, and not so in love with the position. He really seems to be in love with the search for truth. I like Chris Rock a lot. He's a wonderful, crazy personality, a crazy, wonderful sense of humor,
but also
and
a sharp
again,
young man. Yes, yes.
I've written a poem for Beyonce and her husband
Jay-Z
baby Blue. Yes, I think that I remember myself at 17, 19, 20 when the older people said, "Why are you listening to that bebop, Charlie Parker? I don't understand that. Dizzy Gillespie is just hooting and what is that Max Roach?" And I determined then that when I grew older, I was not going to put down the young, whoever represented the young generation. I tried to understand them. And in trying to understand them, I see that, oh, these are poets of their time.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, they don't move me the way they move their generation, but I respect them. I don't respect anyone who uses the N-word and other vulgarities and thinking that that's funny. I don't think that's funny at all. I think it's stupid. If you have poison from the pharmacy and it says poison and it has a skull and bones on the label, it's poison. Now you can pour that content into Bavarian crystal, but the content is still poison. So whenever a person says, "I can use the word because I'm black," no, it's still poison. I just don't accept that. But when a person is funny, if he's funny and clever, I like that. If she is, I like Queen Latifah a lot. The young woman, and she raps.
This is KBOO Portland, and this is Black Book Talk, and we are speaking to Dr. Maya Angelou. Okay. LB, I think you had a question.
Hello. Yes.
I'm just listening to the melodic sound of your voice, and then it reminded me of an old song my grandmother used to sing, Mama's Little Toonie Loonie Loo. Could you elaborate on the relationship between your brother and the father and you as you grew old?
Well, I'm sorry to say my father, my blood father, was quite a phony.
Okay.
He went to World War I and came back with a little French and a French accent. And he's from Stamps, Arkansas. And he did speak Spanish. I give him that. But I wasn't all that proud of it because he took me to Mexico, and there I met his family. He had a wife, obviously a wife, and children that looked like me and my brother. And his Spanish was very, very good. Mine was pretty good. It later became very good, but mine was fairly good. But I just... He wasn't a nice man, and my stepfather was a nice man, but my brother couldn't find him acceptable because my brother was jealous of my mother. Bailey obviously loved her, and when he saw her again, he just fell in even deeper in love. He could never forgive her for sending us away. So by the time he was 19, drugs had him, my brilliant brother. And I used to go into shooting up houses and get him, just walk in, bodacious, and just say, I'm here for my brother, and snatch him out of. And we'd sit sometimes on the sidewalk and just weep. And he told me once, he said, I'm not hurting anyone but myself. Not understanding that his children and his sister and all of us were lessened. And people who he'd never meet, who his intelligence might have been able to help. Anyway, no, my mother and my grandmother and Bailey himself, Bailey to me, he was good to me. But he didn't have a father to look up to help him rise.
Well, I have a question about your music. I read a portion about you writing a part for a woman who couldn't sing very well. So you have a background in music where not only are you a poet, but you write music?
Well, I don't write it well. I can sing it. And when I have written music and scores, but I have a tape recorder and I sing. I hit the E on the piano, and I'll sing the piano part, and then maybe the bass part, or the guitar part, and take my music in a shopping bag to a transcriber, and he or she will transcribe the music, and then it will be done. I've written with Quincy Jones, as I've said, and Roberta Flack and others. I have a good ear, and that's a blessing. But I have no training. I was trained as a dancer, and I was with Porgy and Bess as the premier dancer, the first dancer with the company. And I sang the role Ruby, which was Sporting Life's girlfriend.
Yes.
But I sang by heart at least once a week, if not every night, one of the opera singers. The company could afford to get a person who had one degree from Curtis and another from Juilliard just to be in the chorus. There were so few places where black singers trained in European classics could work. They could afford to get these trained, multi-talented people. So one night or another, one of the singers would say to me, Maya, I'm sorry, but you flatted that E. Oh, Maya, I'm sorry to tell you, you sharped your G. I didn't even know I was singing in the alphabet.
Dr. Angelo, this has been a pleasure. I wish we had three times this much time.
Oh, thank you.
And now I know why we have a Maya Angelou's Writers Guild here in Portland.
That's right. And I'm just delighted that we have all of your books in the library system that I work for, and we will have your newest one. Hope you can come out to Portland, and we can honor you
Portland.
In person.
I love it, and I'd be glad to come out there.
And we look forward to seeing you again in Portland.
Thank you. I look forward to that. And stay well and strong and keep rising, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All
right, this is the end of Black Book Talk for this July. This is Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
Obie Hill, Mirror Image Books.
And Patricia Welch, the library lady, saying good reading to you. Bye-bye.
You said to call on your name, and I'm calling. You said to trust in your word, and I'm trusting. You said to lean on your arm, and I'm leaning, I'm stepping out on your word. You said you'd be my protection, my only and glorious
Savior,
my beautiful rose of
Sharon,
and I'm stepping out on your word.
You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen, sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye. Bye.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland, K220HR Hood River, K282BH Philomath. And we're coming live from the Waterfront Blues Festival on this 4th of July.
Right now at Tomacall Waterfront Park on either side of the Hawthorne Bridge, Thursday today until Saturday the 6th.
And you can come down and join us here live. Suggested admission is $10 plus two cans of food, because this event, all proceeds benefit of the Oregon Food Bank.
Coming up next on the First Tech Blues Stage, we have the usual suspects. This 8-member band was founded by Mike Reese, Portland's chief of police.